You're up in front of an audience, whether it be one-on-one or a group of people. They're looking at you. They're judging you, deciding if they like you. So the question is, how do you win over an audience? Well, there's a variety of ways. Of course, everyone's a little bit different, but some things that we've noticed that work really well. At the Persuasion Institutes, I've done extensive studies on humor in persuasion and humor in presentations. And the bottom line, it works. So find humor. Now, remember with humor, remember that you have to practice it because they're either going to laugh with you or feel sorry for you. Audiences tend to love a personal story about you. It helps them get to know you. Anything you can do for credibility. Can somebody introduce you? What do you have that's credible? The old famous WIIFM, of course, the What's in It for Me. And, of course, a smile is very disarming and very contagious. Remember, it is up to the speaker to get the audience to pay attention. It's not their job, it's your job. They are judging you. What are you going to wear? What is the most credible color? What should you have on? What accessories are things that you need to think about before you show up? Sure, the business world is getting more casual, but if they expect to see you in a suit or professional dress, and you don't show up with that, you will lose credibility. If this is the first time presenting to that audience, you probably want to be business professional. Blue, of course, is the most credible color, followed by black. Go visit them ahead of time. See what they're wearing. See what accessories they have. And isn't it interesting with presentations and persuasion that little things like facial hair? Yes, facial hair can lose some credibility. For women, yeah. And, of course, also for men. Now, if you have facial hair and you like it, that's fine, but you're looking for everything you can do to increase that credibility and enhance that trust. Trust is at an all-time low. Trust has dropped 6 points in the last 5 years. And they don't trust you because they probably think you're going to try to ask them to do something, which you are. You're a persuasive presenter. You see, 20 years ago it was, I trust you, give me a reason not to. Now it's, I don't trust you, give me a reason to trust you. So on this persuasion scale, you're starting much further back than you did, say, 20 years ago. You have to earn it. You have to prove yourself. They are asking themselves, why should I trust this person? Why should I trust this product? You need to show genuine concern. You need to come across as trustworthy. Just because you're trustworthy, just because you're a good person, does not mean they are going to trust you. You have to earn it bit by bit, drop by drop. And it's interesting to note the studies at the Persuasion Institute, when we monitor a presenter and a prospect and they do their presentation and we ask the presenter, do you think the audience trusts you? And they say, yes, 9 out of 10 times. Everyone trusts me. Then we ask the audience, of course, and it's 1 out of 10. So we're looking at 90% the speaker saying, the presenter, and 10% which is true. So what you think you're doing right or wrong is very different than what your audience actually perceives. And different professions enjoy different levels of trust. For example, as we monitor trust levels in different professions, the top of the list is usually something like pharmacists, nurses, and firefighters. And they usually come around top of the list around 60%. That's the top. Clergy's at 59, medical doctors at 57, college teachers at 53, police at 49. That's the top of the list. And as you keep going down the list, stockbrokers are at 19, real estate agents and investors at 16, lawyers 14, insurance sales 11, advertisers 10, network marketing 9, car sales 5. We can go all the way down the list. Doesn't matter whether it's fair or not. We deal with reality. So let's talk about some things that you can do during your presentation and ahead of time that will help enhance your trust. No trust, no persuasion. That's the bottom line. So let's review real quick the 5 C's of trust. The first one, of course, is character. That's you on the inside. That's what you do when nobody is watching. That's your honesty, integrity, and sincerity. In fact, UCLA did a study and found that most business executives agree that integrity was one of the most important things to succeed in business. Of course, that's for the long term. You can get things done in the short term, but eventually, if you have no integrity, it will catch up with you. And as Zig Ziglar says, the most important persuasion tool you have in your entire arsenal is integrity. And it's interesting that the Latin root of the word sincerity is sinceris, which means without wax. Because pillar sculptors, way back then, sometimes used wax to hide their mistakes, so they could still pass their work off as unflawed. Years of weathering eventually revealed their deception, so a sincere person was considered to be one without wax or camouflage. Today, wax or no wax, the average person can sense falsehood, deception, and insincerity. There is more to being honest than just not to get caught in the lie. Just because they didn't say, oh, we think you're lying, oh, we don't trust you, oh, wait a minute, we didn't like you, doesn't mean it's not happening. We've been trained to be nice. Most people will not call you on any lie or any type of deception. Character. Second is competence. That's your knowledge, that's your intelligence, that's your ability. Is that real or perceived? It's both. Most of the time it's perceived. It doesn't matter how smart you are or how much you know or how much research you've done if it doesn't come across in your presentation. I've seen this time and time again in the world of presentations that the one that has the most knowledge, that is the most skilled, a lot of times does not get the business because they don't come across that way in a presentation setting. Now, if people just go off degrees and accomplishments, there's credibility there. Their competence level is high. Understand there's a perception. How you act, how you come across, how you walk. That is competence. The next one is confidence. People want a sense you know what you're talking about. Now, confidence can be assurance, belief, or even your conviction. J. Conrad Levinson of Guerrilla Marketing fame says confidence is the number one reason people are persuaded. You have to have confidence in your presentation. You see, people are constantly looking for someone to help direct them in their lives and help them make the right choices. Demonstrating confidence in everything you do will draw others to put their trust in you. If you are perceived as doubtful or unconfident, your audience will feel that way too. They will feel that way about you and your product or service. Remember how you come across, especially in the first 30 seconds. Fixing a first impression is like fixing a wrecked car. Even after it is fixed, you know it still has been wrecked. You need to maintain this confidence all the way through your presentation. Now, just a side note here about confidence. As I interview different audiences, they say the speaker was cocky and the speaker thought they were confident. Now, we all know there's a fine line between being cocky and being confident. And the moment you cross that line, they will turn off, they will not like you, and they will not trust you. Because when you come across as cocky, whether you are or not, it doesn't matter. It's the perception. The audience's mind will shut down. So, what is the difference? Well, confidence is more your belief in yourself to serve others and to help others. With cockiness, it seems that you're coming across more about you, and you're the most important person in the situation. Being bragful and boastful also come under the category as being cocky. Another C is credibility. Have you been truthful? Now let's talk about truth. It doesn't matter if it's true if your audience doesn't believe it. So you could tell truth all day long, but if it's not believable, your audience will not trust you. So make sure all your information, your facts, your statistics is believable. What about your history? Do they have history with you or your company, your product or service, your industry? Have they heard things about your product, your service, your industry? That's all history, and that affects your credibility. And, of course, experience. Any type of experience they've had with you or your industry. Jerry Spence, very famous trial lawyer, I don't think he's ever lost a case, said this. One can stand as the greatest orator the world has ever known, possess the quickest mind, employ the cleverest psychology, and have mastered all the technical devices of argument, but if one is not credible, one might just as well preach to the pelicans. And Edward Murrow said, to be persuasive, we must be believable. To be believable, we must be credible. To be credible, we must be truthful. Credibility is in the eye of the beholder and is constantly changing. Credibility can be high and low in the same presentation with the same audience. Credibility can change with time, presentation, or somebody else's opinion. So as you take a look at your credibility, you have to understand you have a credibility when you start your presentation. That's your initial credibility, how you're introduced, your reputation, books maybe you've written, it could be degrees, what do you have when you start that creates that initial credibility. Then during your presentation, what happens to that initial credibility? Did you shoot yourself in the foot? It's very similar to a thermometer. It will rise and fall during your presentation. It never stays the same. Then, of course, at the very end, this is the most important, did you win them over? Or did you lose them? Are they even more convinced than they were before? This information is very important to you. Credibility is like a thermometer. You have to monitor it throughout the presentation. And as you become a great persuasive presenter, you'll be able to sense it and feel it. And another way to boost your credibility is to present yourself in a calm, organized, and authoritative manner. When you look at successful attorneys or successful CEOs, they don't come running into a room. They're in control. They are credible. Studies show that lawyers who appear well-organized are thought of being more thorough and better prepared, which we know increases credibility. Last C is congruence. That is your consistency, your harmony, and of course that your words match your actions. Trust increases when others can see that your words match your actions. This is congruence. Agreement and harmony in verbal and nonverbal messages increases your ability to influence. As you know, people will believe your nonverbal messages more than your verbal messages. When congruence is lacking, a red flag is raised, and either consciously or subconsciously, your listener will not give you his or her full trust. It's like the clothes we wear every day. If your clothes match well, usually no one really pays attention to what you're wearing. When your clothes are clashing and mismatched, it will be the only thing people notice and remember about you. Most incongruencies are found in our body language. Countless studies demonstrate that when body language is not congruent or in disagreement with the message, the body language will always be believed over the message. Your body language must be congruent with your message and used to support or enhance your message. So ask yourself, are you congruent with your history, your last interaction, your reputation? Are your emotions congruent with your message? Do your verbal and nonverbal messages sync together? What are their expectations of you and your message? You see, suspicion will arise, and your audience will start to look for things that are wrong with you or your message. When you attempt to fake congruence, you will spend your time and energy trying to fake your message. Trust is critical as a presenter. And it's really interesting to note what the studies show about trust and credibility. Your audience is looking at you, and they are trying to find something that's wrong or a weakness. And here's the interesting thing. If you come across as too perfect, too good to be true, you lose their trust. So here is the interesting situation. If you don't reveal a weakness to them, something that's wrong with you or your message or your product, they will assign one to you. And I tell you right now, you would rather give them a weakness that you have rather than having your audience assign one to you. Now, when you reveal a weakness, make sure you turn that weakness into a strength. And you're not going to let them know you're an axe murderer, you've been in jail, you're a kleptomaniac, or your product doesn't work. You'll reveal minor things so they feel better and more trustful that this situation is more real. For example, if you were a one-person operation going against a large corporation, that decreases your credibility. That decreases the trust. Larger companies are often more respected and trusted than a one-person operation. They're going to find out anyway. You need to reveal a weakness anyway. You might as well tell them, look, it is just me. But let me tell you about that. So what happened is you revealed a weakness. Now, let's turn it into a strength. You would say something like, I know there are larger corporations bidding on this contract, but let me tell you something. This is the only contract I'm going to work on right now. You'll have access to me and my cell phone 24 hours a day. You will only be working with me. More trust, more credibility. You've taken a weakness and turned it into a strength. Trust is critical to connect with your audience. So let's go over these five C's real fast. What if the speaker had great character but no competence? So if you were in the audience and you knew more than the speaker, or the speaker said something that you knew was wrong, there was no competence, there is no trust. Or what if the speaker had great competence but no character? They knew everything, you were very impressed with their knowledge, but you know they've been in jail. Wow, there would be no trust. Or if you're watching a presentation and the speaker has no confidence, they're not sure of themselves, their manner, the way they walk, the way they talk. Words like, well, I hope this might work, I think, try it out, I'm not sure. No confidence, no trust. Or credibility. Last time you heard the speaker, you did business with them and you fell on your face. And it didn't work out. Past experience. No credibility, no trust. Or if the speaker came across as too polished and too good to be true. And then, of course, congruence, where you're watching them and something didn't feel right and what they were saying didn't match with their nonverbal behavior. You need to have all five C's of trust. Character, competence, confidence, credibility, and congruence. Next thing you have to understand to win over your audience is you have the ability to connect with them. You have to be a likable person. If you're not likable, then it's very difficult to persuade them. You have to be able to create that instant connection and create that synchronization. And there's a variety of ways to do that. There's one called the halo effect. That's attraction. That's how good you look. Whether it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter. This is reality. Better looking people come across as more intelligent, more credible, and more trustworthy. Did you know even in the judicial system that the uglier convict gets longer time in prison than the better looking one? Presidential elections, a better looking candidate usually wins. I can go on and on, but how you look, how you dress, we talked about your clothing. That's all part of connecting. Are you dressed very differently than the person you're talking to? Which comes to the next one, which is similarity. They need to feel, hey, they understand me. Hey, they've been in the same situation as me. That speaker, that presenter is like me. So what can you find in common with your audience? You can find something in common with everybody you meet, one-on-one or even an audience. Do your research. Is it an opinion? Is it a problem everyone's trying to solve? Is it a lifestyle? Is it a background? Is it personality traits? What is it that you have in common? And notice I said similarity, not being identical. You know, if you show up to a party wearing the same dress or the same suit or the exact same tie as somebody, it doesn't connect you. It almost repels you a little bit. Your audience needs a sense, that person's like me. That person understands me. That person can help me. Because familiar objects are more like than less familiar ones. Studies show that we tend to like and are attracted to those who are like us and we can relate to. If you watch a party, people instantly gravitate to people that are similar to themselves. But when you find something that's similar, make sure it's something relevant. If you're talking about not wanting to pay taxes or something with the government or a controversial topic, is that relevant to what you're talking about? And of course, make sure that it's something positive. Really? I had a heart attack too. Or, hey, I'm a convicted felon. Where did you serve time? Not positive, not persuasive, and will not attract you to people. You also need to monitor your people skills. Now, deep breath. Oh, I've heard people skills before. Well, most presenters, most persuaders rate their people skills 2 to 3 to almost 4 times higher than they actually are. People will be nice to you even though they don't like you. They just won't tell you. So I want you to dig deep and really think about your people skills because you've never arrived with people skills. You always need to work on your people skills. And the study showed out of Harvard that 66% of the people downsized, fired, were fired because of their inability to work with people. And of course, they didn't know that. And of course, they blame somebody else. But it's a critical life skill that's an all-time low. So what are some people skills? Respect. Show respect to your audience. Show respect to your competition. The moment you demean the audience, the moment you demean the competition, you've lost them. You have disconnected yourself. Now, what if there's a competitor that's bad, that'll take advantage of them, and you don't want them to do business with them? Well, you need to provide a way where they can find out for themselves without you telling them. Is that visiting a website? Is it calling references? Going to the Better Business Bureau? Whatever it is, provide a way for them to find out. But once you've demeaned or shown disrespect for somebody or another corporation, or anybody for that matter, that disconnects you with most audiences. Showing empathy, showing goodwill, showing that you care all connect you to your audience. The safest way to increase people skills is to give away smiles. A smile is free, generates a great first impression, and shows happiness, acceptance, and confidence. Your smile shows that you are pleased to be where you are, meeting this person, meeting this audience, or meeting anybody. As a result, they become more interested in meeting you, more interested in listening to you. Smiling also conveys a feeling of acceptance, which makes your listener more trusting of you. It has been shown that sales reps, those that persuade, who smile during the sales process, increase their success rate by 20%. However, as with traditional humor, use it appropriately. Smiling at the wrong time, too long at the right moment, can disconnect you with people. Another aspect of connecting is rapport. That harmonious link, that synchronization with somebody. They're following your every move. They're listening to every word that you're saying. As you know, and I've mentioned, you're constantly being read by others. Studies have been done on the university level, monitoring men and women and their ability to read people's faces. Of course, women are better than men, but people's ability to read facial expressions and assign emotion to those expressions did much better in the workforce than those who couldn't do it. And they were happier and they accomplished more. You can read people like a book. You can read your audience like a book. Is it a fake smile? Is it a true smile? Are they indifferent? Are they ready for a break? Learn to read people, and as you do that, you can develop rapport. One aspect of rapport is your nonverbals. We've talked about your nonverbal behavior. Every gesture you use will either attract or distract from your message. Albert Mehrabian did different studies on the believability of your message. And scientifically, he broke it down and said 55% of the believability of your message is visual, your body language. 38% is vocal. That would be your tone of voice. And 7% is verbal, the individual words that you use. It is the whole package. Learn to develop rapport, whether it be one-on-one, over the phone, or a whole audience. When you've developed this rapport, they listen, they like you, they trust you, which dramatically increases your ability to persuade. Another aspect of persuasive presentations is understanding ego and understanding esteem of individual people and your audience as a whole. Everyone has a great desire, a great need to be accepted. They love compliments, they love praise, they love recognition. You see, self-esteem is at an all-time low. Everybody suffers from low self-esteem. Now, let me define this. Self-esteem is how much you like yourself, period. Most people in different aspects of their life, maybe it's presenting, maybe it's in a swimsuit, maybe it's in the workplace, maybe it's over the phone. We all suffer different aspects. We are so hungry for acceptance. We are so hungry for a boost of our self-esteem, we'll almost do anything. When someone is praised, the audience or the individual person basks in the compliment and does everything in his power to live up to the praise and to acquire more praise. You can actually change the way people behave by complimenting them when they behave the way you want them to and withholding compliments when they don't. Human beings have a psychological need to be respected and accepted. We need affection to satisfy the need to belong. We want praise and feel admired. We want recognition to satisfy our need for personal worth. We want our ego stroked to enhance our feeling of importance. Now, most won't admit this. Some will say they don't care, but this need is built into our psyche and is a critical component in the persuasion and presentation process. People want to feel better about themselves. People want to see the hope in the future. They want to see the vision of the things that they're able to accomplish. The moment you make your audience feel better about themselves, there are two reasons why our culture suffers greatly from low self-esteem. First, media and advertising show us how we should look, what we should drive, what we should smell like. You know the drill. The message is that we are never good enough with what we are. We see images of grooming, fashion, popularity, and attractiveness that we can never measure up to. These images constantly remind us that we need to improve ourselves, and there's always someone better than us. The second one is we always judge and measure ourselves not against our own norm, but against someone else's individual's norm, meaning we measure our weaknesses against somebody else's strengths instead of evaluating ourselves in a realistic manner. You need to be able to praise your audience. They need to be able to believe your praise. You have to be sincere. When you are able to praise on a realistic and sincere level, it boosts your self-esteem and releases positive energy into your audience. An interesting study was done at Hollins College, where the psychology students, all the males in the psychology department, got together and started complimenting all the women wearing red dresses on campus. You look beautiful in red. And guess what happened? More people started wearing red. And then they switched it up. You look beautiful in blue. And the same thing happened. There's a dramatic increase in the number of people wearing that color of outfit. So how do you do this? Well, first of all, if you really want to learn how to praise and understand praise is free, you need to praise something positive. Oh, I thought you'd be bankrupt by now. No. Okay. Good that you're still here. I thought you'd be fired. No. Something positive. It needs to be specific. Not, hey, great job today, but the way you handled this thing and this thing, be specific and be sincere. The ironic thing is it still works even when you're not sincere because your audience is so hungry for praise. I'm not endorsing that. It's called ingratiation. What I want you to be as a presenter, I want you to be sincere. Be specific and be positive with your praise. Another thing we notice with great presenters is empathy. I didn't say sympathy, I said empathy. There's a difference. Sympathy, you can feel sorry for someone. With empathy, you know why they hurt. You've been in their shoes. You can relate to them. Empathy is a huge part to get your audience to connect with you, to open up to you, and have your audience give you permission to persuade. You see, empathy comes from a combination of Latin and Greek words to see through the eye of the other, walking in their moccasins. This is unconditional acceptance. They don't want to feel judged. They already judge themselves harshly enough. That's why their self-esteem is so low. So how do you show empathy? Approval. Give them attention. Praise. Acceptance. All those things come into play to really connect with an audience. Another important aspect of connecting with your audience is knowing your topic. I'm not here to sugarcoat it, so the reality is there's no such thing as a boring topic, only a boring presenter. Now, many will fight me on this, but that's reality. A great presenter can take any topic and make it come alive. Again, it's not the topic, it's you, the presenter. If I gave you the topic of warts, could you make that come exciting? What about weeding, manure? Could you make that exciting? There's a lot of fun things you can teach about manure. We can generate electricity, the fertilizer. It comes back to what does your audience want to hear? Weeding. That makes many of us tense, remembering our childhoods, all the weeding we had to do. And you had to teach a group of parents about weeding. How could you make that exciting? Well, pretty simple. Four ways to get your teenager to beg you to weed your yard. Whoa, you interested? Did that kind of grab your attention a little bit? Well, I don't have the answer to that. I would find it. I would create something doing that to find ways that resonates with your audience. One more time, it's not the topic, it's the speaker. Another thing to connect or could cause you to repel your audience is your ability to field and answer questions. They're going to put you on the spot. They're going to want to know what you know. So as a great presenter, the first thing you need to know is anticipate all questions before you even get there. If they ask you a question and they expect you to know that question and you don't, you've lost all trust, you've lost all credibility, and you've disconnected yourself from your audience. How do you handle those questions? What do you do with the question hog? You know the one I'm talking about. That one that wants all the social validation. They keep raising their hands. They want to put in their 2 points. They want everyone to know that they're smart. But you have to sense as a presenter, every time they raise their hand, the audience gets a little tense. I think the easiest way is, first of all, to ignore them. Start calling in other people. If that doesn't work and they're dancing in the aisle, you need to take a break and say, hey, I enjoy your questions, but I'm trying to get everyone to participate. There are a variety of ways to do that, but you can handle that. But what if no questions are asked during your 15-minute Q&A period? You better have prepared some. Here's the question that comes up the most. Get the ball rolling. It's kind of a university setting. Nobody wants to raise their hand for the first time. They don't want to look dumb. If there's no questions, maybe you were too complex. Maybe your audience didn't speak English. Or maybe they didn't have any. But you need to be ready to get that ball rolling. And what if they ask the tough questions? Questions you don't know the answer to, but if you say you don't know, you've lost all credibility. Now, there's a time and place where you can say, I don't know. But understand, if they expect you to know, you will lose credibility if you don't. Now, I don't want you to lie. There are ways to save face during this process. If somebody asks you a question you don't know, one thing you can do is throw it back to the audience. Huh, great question. What do you think? Throw it back to that one person, to the audience. Get the ball rolling. Ask them to repeat the question. We'll get you a few more minutes to think about it. You could say something like, you know, that's taking us off track a little bit. Tell you what, I'll fax you that information later, which buys you more time without losing face. Or another thing you can do is say, that's a great question. Let me get with you at the break. And you talk to that one person at the break, and then you say, I don't know. I think it might be this. But it's the one person instead of the whole audience. Your ability to answer questions in a credible, competent, trustworthy manner will make or break you as a presenter, will cause you to connect or disconnect with your audience. The next phase of questioning is understanding the mindset of a heckler. A heckler is someone that's going to disagree with you, that might have venomous comments towards you, but I make heckling pretty broad. It could be somebody sleeping, it could be a crying baby, it could be a room that's too hot. Anything that distracts from your message. Your ability to handle a heckler with your credibility intact is critical. Because if you lose control, you've lost all credibility with your audience. Because somebody throws a great heckle at you, and your whole audience is sitting back smiling, wondering, wow, I wonder how they're going to handle that. In the political world, they call it bracketing. They go and they have people heckle different candidates. And so we have to think, why do people heckle? It goes back to your childhood. Why did you tease somebody? You tease to get a reaction. People heckle to get a reaction. That is what they want. I tease many of my presentation students that we're going to bring someone in from the National Heckling Federation to heckle them. Now, that doesn't exist, but we bring someone in to heckle them. On their last presentation, we bring in a heckler because your ability to handle a heckler is critical to your success. So what do you do when someone heckles you or asks too many questions, or is very negative, or is talking too much, falls asleep, is talking on their cell phone? These are all heckles. Now, you'll see more heckling in the evening than you do in the morning, but remember, they're looking for a reaction. You have to understand that you need the audience on your side. You are the presenter. You are in control. You can't lose that control, and you can't attack the heckler. For example, there's a crying baby. Everyone's looking at it. The mother has no idea. It's just listening away. The baby's crying, bothering everyone. Everyone would love the baby to leave. And then as a presenter, you say, "Shut the baby up. It's driving me nuts." And what happens? No, wait a minute. All of a sudden, the audience has turned against you. How dare you say something so mean and condescending? Now, the whole audience was thinking about it, but if you say it, you lose all your points. So your goal is to help them understand that the baby's bothering the audience without being negative or condescending. You see, most, around 80% of heckling is clueless. They don't know they're bothering you. They don't know they've fallen asleep. They don't know they're talking too loud. They don't know the cell phone's bothering the audience. They don't know they have an annoying personality. You need to handle it. Now, when it gets really bad, you can let the audience take care of it for you. I'll give you an example. I was doing a teleconference, a couple hundred people on the line, and I was plugging along, and this lady rudely interrupted me and said, "Look, I didn't pay for this information. I want this and this. When I speak for the whole audience, when I say, I want to learn this." I said, and it kind of took me back because I don't know why she would have said that. But I knew the audience was following along and that I had the rapport with the majority of the audience. Now, two options here. I can yell at her and take her head off, which she probably deserved. She was very negative, very condescending. What I did, though, is I turned it over to the audience. I said, "Wow, you speak for the audience. Great. Audience, class, what do you think?" And I just stood back and listened as they ripped her head off. They said some things I can't repeat on this audio, and she hung up and went away. The class took care of it. And that's true when people get annoying or very condescending or use a lot of venom. Usually your class will help you out. So understand, most heckling, what I call stage one heckling, is clueless. You just have to call their attention to it. If they're on a cell phone, a little silence. If the baby's crying, ask politely if you can help. If they're falling asleep, you look at the spouse. Very basic things. And as you go down to it, also understand what we call stage two heckling. These are people that are doing it on purpose, that a lot of people heckle when they're anonymous. When you have them announce their name and their company and why they're there and where they're from, they tend to heckle less. And then there's stage three. That's when you have to call security. And that rarely happens. But it is an option for you. It is better that one person get kicked out. It's better that one person is forced to leave than the whole audience's attitude and demeanor be destroyed. So learn to handle heckler. The best thing is take it. Smile. It's not bothering you. Water off a duck's back. However you want to describe it. Just like when Reagan was debating, Ronald Reagan, and they heckled him for his age, that he was too old to run for president. He said, "Yep, we can talk about age, but I don't want to bring up the youth and inexperience of my candidates." Wow, that's what we're looking for. A little humor, having some fun with it, it's not bothering you, and it will start to go away. Because you know, if you tease somebody growing up, you keep teasing them as long as you get the reaction. When the reaction's not there, the teasing goes away, and that's true with heckling. Again, that could be a baby. It could be a fire alarm going off. And that happens all the time if you start speaking in hotels. And understand, the audience will always look to you as the leader of the audience. If someone's having a heart attack, you're in charge. If the room's too hot, it's your fault. If the coffee's bad, you need to fix it. And you have to ask yourself, what happens if someone starts coming in and taking food orders in the middle of your presentation? Or the phone rings? All these different things happen. You have to maintain your stride and stay in control. And sometimes as a presenter, you might turn into the heckler and heckle yourself or do something strange where the audience is looking at you in a strange way. I remember one time I was about 7 hours into an 8 or 9 hour presentation. I was getting a little fatigued. I was taking a drink of water, went down the wrong pipe, and I sprayed the whole front row. And I used humor to diffuse that situation. Learn to handle hecklers. Learn to answer and respond to questions. A lot of times when you monitor presenters, you can tell they're getting tense with a heckler, and the audience can sense it and see it, and you lose credibility. Or someone asks a question you don't like, or a question you felt you already answered. No, every question is very important. The way you handle it, even if you say you'll answer it at the break, you can't get nervous, you can't get tense, you can't let them take advantage of you. You can't let them see that they're getting under your nerves, because the moment they sense and see that you're getting under their nerves, then duck, because they're going to unleash all the heckling, all the questions that could really cause you to lose your credibility. And I also include with heckling equipment failure. If you start using any type of electronics, it will fail, whether it be an overhead projector, a PowerPoint, a computer projector, a computer, a fancy PowerPoint presentation. You need to be prepared with backups, because equipment will go out, light bulbs will burn out, projectors won't work, people will forget different things. Even though you've asked them 3 or 4 times, you need to be ready to give the presentation without PowerPoint, or print out the PowerPoint ahead of time, or bring PowerPoint and transparencies for the overhead projector. Because the more you do this, you're going to find that the equipment will heckle you, or your materials might not show up, or the room's not set up in the right way, or there's a loud group next door, or people arrive late, they're talking to their partner, they light up a cigarette when they're not supposed to. Or my favorite one is the person that comes in late. They're 2 hours late, everybody looks at them, and they say, "Did I miss anything important?" You know, what do you say? "No, I talked about stupid things for the first 2 hours." "Nah, you didn't miss anything important." You just have to take it in stride. It's part of the people that you're dealing with. Sometimes they say some things that they shouldn't, but they do. So you deal with those difficulties. If there's an accident, don't get flustered. Stay in control. Now, on the heckling part, if they disagree with you, you don't need to start a fight. You can just say, "I see your point of view," and you can move on. You don't need to attack them right there. And that's true with most venom comments. When they're trying to attack you personally, or make fun of your mom, or where you're from, or your accent, or religion, whatever it is, you take it in stride. They're looking for a reaction, and do not take it. The audience will stay on your side. So if someone insults you or attacks you, laugh it off. Show that has no meaning or sting. Because if you defend yourself and you look defensive and you get angry, you invite counterattacks. Now, as mentioned earlier, heckling increases in the evening. It increases when alcohol is served. It increases when there's a heavy dinner like steak and gravy. And many times it's just the attention that they want. And you need to be aware of this and prepared for it. Visualize it. Sometimes they just might want attention, and you can give them a little. Reminds me of a story of a elderly man walking into this large corporate training, little drunk, late at night, large meal, free alcohol, and started heckling the speaker. And the speaker said, "If you don't like what I have to say, why don't you go home?" Now, first of all, you say that to anybody, you've lost credibility. Second of all, it was the CEO who was heckling, who was drunk. His wife passed away a few weeks earlier, said some things he shouldn't have. The CEO left, and so did everybody else. So don't get shocked. Don't get angry. Don't be rude. Don't expose your middle finger. The best thing is to show them that it's not getting to you. Use humor. They heckle you. You could say something like, "Well, I wish I had a lower IQ so I could appreciate that one." No, I'm kidding. You don't want to say that. But have something that you can say. Prepare mentally that you are going to stay in control. So some things never to say to a heckler. "Come here now." Wow. You're threatening. You're telling them to obey you. It's coming back to their childhood. Or you would never want to say, "Well, you wouldn't understand." What are you implying there? That they're stupid? What if you said, "Well, those are the rules. That's the policy." Or it's none of your business. What do you want me to do about it? Or worse, calm down. What are you telling them? That they are out of control. Or what's your problem? Telling them that they have a problem? That's not what people want to hear. Or "I'm not going to tell you this again." Or "Why don't you be reasonable?" What are you saying? That they're irrational and unreasonable. You are in charge. You are in control. Don't let the heckler or annoying questions get the better of you. We avoid name calling. We avoid profanity. They say, "Well, what if I'm speaking at a trucker's convention? Shouldn't I use profanity?" No. Not unless that's part of your everyday language. They'll see right through it. Avoid sexist language. Be politically correct. Don't rip on the competition. Don't speak about politics or religion unless that's what you're persuading on, because you lose their attention, you get some of the people upset, and it decreases your ability to persuade. Never tell them that you'd rather be someplace else. Never misstate the name of the sponsoring organization. Now, that sounds pretty basic, but it happens all the time. Never let them know you've given the speech hundreds of times or even given it once before. Never intentionally embarrass an audience member unless you know that person and know that they can handle it. Remember, your listeners are not objects. To reach them, you must compete with the environment, which means hecklers, which also means things in the room, things outside the national news, and even the contents of their stomach. You have to be aware. How long can they last without a caffeine break or a cigarette break? What do they say? The mind can only absorb what the seat can endure? You have to be aware of that. If you let them sit too long without a break, they will start turning against you. Because there's biological things like hearing impairments. You're having a hard time hearing or it's too loud. Fatigue, hunger, mind-altering drugs or alcohol, hormones for teenagers. And then, of course, there's things in the environment. Noise, jackhammer outside, construction above you, the heat, malfunctioning microphones, glare from the sunlight, lack of ventilation, uncomfortable seats. You need to do everything you can to improve your chances of being heard. If they need a break, maybe they need a drink. Maybe you need to shut the curtains to reduce the glare. Maybe you need more fresh air. Maybe you need to check the microphone earlier. So to recap, understand you need to grab their attention, maintain their attention, get their trust, connect with them, and have the ability to handle a heckler and those annoying questions. Learn to grab your audience's attention right away. Relate your topic to the audience. Let them know why it's so important to them. You could startle them with a statistic or a story. Anything you can do to arouse their curiosity. Question, a quote, a statistic, a story. Those are key factors for your success. Remember the numbers. When they like or trust you, 90% chance of persuading them. When they don't like you and don't trust you, you have a 10%. And how you deal with hecklers and the questions and your ability to connect is a power tool with your ability to become a persuasive presenter.